welcome back. And I think Lee and Tim Price is a perfect way to end the last segment and to begin this new segment of the Mark Steiner Show, because part of the power of what we talk about is what happens in the in this country, that people don't realize the power of culture and the intellect in the black world that gets lost. She talks to that, but I think our guests here speak to that in terms of what could be and needs to be in the society. Dr. Samuel Springer is with us, who is one of the leading organists in the world, organ and piano instructor at Morgan State University and Peabody Institute of Johns Hopkins University. And Brian Alston's in the studio, also an organist and choir director at St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church. Good to have you both in the studio.
Oh, good to be here.
So, and thanks for coming in. I really appreciate you all coming here. And we can probably use a little spirituality and music here for a moment.
Indeed, the intensity
of what we're facing around us.
Definitely.
But, Dr. Springer, it's good to finally have you in the studio.
Thank you. I've been here before, but not with you. Actually, with Cuba. We talked about
with
Cuba.
The Cuban trip. Yeah. Talk about this with this organ and what's in what.
Well, this is one of the best organs in Baltimore and perhaps in the country. We've had many great organists going through, the church and the music. What a lot of people don't associate with, I guess, black culture is that there is a lot of classical music that has gone on, I mean, from the beginning. You know, of course, it came through slavery and through the church. You know, the organists would train singers, you know, about Marilyn Anderson and those, but they also taught a lot of black church musicians. Florence Price is one of those. She's a woman, and she was a famous organist. She also wrote a symphony. And Baltimore's had a number of prominent black organists, Mark Fax, Thomas Kerr. They're native Baltimoreans, and they taught at Howard. And, the organ is the king of instruments. It is an orchestra played by one person. And that is why it fills the room, it fills your hearts. Everybody knows the power of the instrument, but it's also a gentle side, too. So it incorporates everything.
And so what is this aeolian? Is it aeolian? Do I say that right?
Everybody has trouble pronouncing that word.
But it's aeolian,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, aeolian, right.
So what is this organ? What is this concert? What does aeolian mean?
Well, it was an organ company. There were two companies, Aeolian and Skinner, and they merged. One was Donald Harrison. He was an Englishman, and the other one was Skinner, and they merged and they started the romantic organ music building society in America. There were two factions: the romantic side and the neo-baroque side. And, you know, you had to be in one camp or the other. So they put it together, sort of the English organ sound. And it's very powerful.
Right, very unique as well.
Right.
What do you mean?
Well, yeah, well, because if you compare the sound of, you know, an American organ, because most organs, you have, like, the French organs, and you have the Italian organs. But, you know, in this sense, because it's a combination of styles, it does have its own very unique sound. That's why, you know, so many organists, you know, flock to, you know, whenever you hear, like, oh, this is going to be an Aeolian Skinner, you know, they run to it right away because, you know, it's so unique. Mm-hmm. And now, since, you know, the Aeolian Skinner company is no longer, you know, in operation, and they closed down in the, like around 1971, 1972, you know, it's a particularly rare organ. And, you know, and I know it's always a privilege for me being the organist of that church to be able to, you know, play on it every Sunday. But because it's
in your church.
Yes, it's in my
church.
It
lives in your church.
Yes, it lives there. Yeah, so I'm its soul keeper. Not soul keeper, but, you know.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes, indeed.
But I think that's part of the world that we don't get. In Morgan State University, I think is a real prime example of this, which is the world of African Americans in classical music and the training and the work and what takes place here. It takes place in few other universities in this way,
yes.
Especially in the world of opera and choral music and more. I want to talk a bit about that. I mean, because I think that people always see this disconnect. They always kind of look at the classical world as a white world, and it's also a world that has kept a lot of black folks out of the center of it. That's part of it too. But
well, yes. I mean, we all know about Marian Anderson and Angela Brown. She was the first Bess, and I think she actually went to Morgan. And, you know, it has been a struggle, and especially for, I think, black males particularly. But right now, you know, they're making a big breakthrough. We've got two young men that are, I think, at the Met right now.
From Morgan.
From Morgan.
Mm-hmm. The Metropolitan Opera is what you mean.
Metropolitan Opera.
Right, right.
As Kaya Savage is a tenor. He's about to make his debut. Solomon Howard just made his debut last season.
And while we're on that subject, you know, there's another brilliant, yeah, I think wonderful up-and-coming organist. His name is Roderick Demings. He's probably a lot of people in this community probably know his name. He's a brilliant organist. He's an organist at Douglas Memorial, as well. He's studying to get his degree at Peabody. And already, you know, he has started playing around the world. You know, I mean, I think he played for the Pope a couple of years ago. So, you know, I think that was, we were trying to get him for this concert, but it didn't work. But hopefully in a future concert we will. But, yeah, that's another name to just kind of keep a note of, because he's an absolutely, you know, fantastic organist as well. So that's definitely something, you know, that we can, you know, that's a ray of hope here. You know, to have a young, you know, African American organist, it's getting more and more rare.
Rare, you say?
Yeah, particularly, you know, in, you know, African American churches, you know, you don't see it a whole lot.
I think in churches across the country, actually, because, you know, they're replacing the organ with the praise band and whatnot.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
Classical music on a whole, I think, is struggling in some churches.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of churches, you know, they do have wonderful organs, and, you know, and a lot of times they just kind of sit back there.
I just thought it's kind of a musical question here in terms of music that you could probably answer, because it made me think of this as soon as you both said what you just said. Because we think of the world of gospel music, and we think of the genre of blues that came out of the gospel world. Now, many people were shocked about that when it happened.
Right.
But we're also talking about classical music as being part of the African-American gospel tradition, right?
Yeah.
I like to kind of talk a bit about marrying those two and how that.
Well, I think that happened, you know, after the antebellum times. Classical music was really kept alive in the church. They built choral societies, and, you know, the big choirs for Sunday morning usually sang, you know, some of the classics by Handel and Haydn and those people. And so they kept that going. And even now, you know, that's still a big part of some churches, choir, mm-hmm. you know, the anthems.
Yeah, and I've always, you know, been fascinated by that combination of the classical and the African-American. It really creates a very interesting, you know, combination. Now, one artist that comes to mind immediately is Richard Smallwood. You know, which I know a lot of people will be familiar, with some of his work. Because, you know,
we'll talk about who he is for people who are not.
Yeah, very famous gospel artist, you know, who was classically trained. You know, one famous song in particular is "Total Praise." He came out with. And he was a more he's a Morgan graduate. Yes, and he and. And he, you know, if you listen to some of his music, he has the gospel, but he also has, mm-hmm. you know, that classical influence. In fact, one of his, you know, pieces, you know, one of his Easter songs was made off of a classical piece by, you know, the classical composer Sergei Rachmaninoff.
Yeah.
And so, but there has been interaction, I mean, for years, whether it was Dvorak or others, between the black community, the black classical community.
Yeah, well, he taught, you know, some people in the conservatory that's now defunct. And he said that America's music was the music of the African American folk songs. That's what he said, and he tried to push that, you know, at that time.
And I think that when every time I read what Dvorak said and the people who are around Dvorak who are African American in this country and who learned with him and worked with him and also taught him what was going on, that how prescient that was in terms of the power of African American culture, the power that African American culture has on this country and the planet.
Yeah, and there are lots of works out there that are not done. I mean, Florence Price, William Grant Still wrote the Afro American Symphony. They're good works. They're not done.
What do you mean they're not?
You know, nobody programs them.
Oh, nobody plays them.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I thought he finished it. I wasn't sure.
Nobody plays them. You know.
But that's true.
Art music, art songs. There are lots of art songs.
And define what that means.
Art song is like a Schubert Lieder. You know, Schubert, Brahms. There are a lot of composers who wrote music like that to be done in a concert by a singer or, you know, on piano, the suite. And a lot of it's not programmed, it's not played. Maybe they don't know about it, but, you know.
So, that would be interesting to kind of push this idea. And we had a program on this a few months back, about 4 or 5 months ago, just on the role of African Americans in classical music and also as composers, conductors, mm-hmm. and artists, and how the work is not being played. And you'd think that in communities like ours and others that this would be a place where this would begin to happen.
Well, we do that. I mean, I know I'm Morgan, you know, Vincent Stringer has been doing a lot.
I saw him just the other night. Yes, right.
Doing a lot with that. I mean, on the concert, I'm playing two pieces. One's by Calvert Johnson. It's an arrangement of a spiritual. And the other one is a piece by Billy Strayhorn, Lotus Blossom, which was done at Duke Ellington's funeral. It was something requested by his widow. Hmm. So I'm going to play.
Are you doing this on the organ?
On the organ.
Solo?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Solo.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Just, of course.
Just me.
So when you take place things like that, because it wasn't originally played on organ, right?
No. But it's being arranged. Duke Ellington used to play this to calm his nerves before he would do a concert. So he'd be on the piano just
to chill himself out.
Exactly.
So somebody will have a shot of cognac. He played this.
Yeah, played Lotus Blossom.
Some musicians, we have our own rituals. Everyone's a little bit different.
Right. Well, what's yours?
Well, mine, basically pace around the floor and just, you know, wait to go on, basically, you know, that's it. But, yeah, I just, you know, when I think about, you know, the combination of African-American music and classical music, really, in my opinion, I don't think you would have the American sound without, you know, the infusion of the African rhythms that came down from, you know, the Africans that were brought over here, you know, and just over that time period, I think they just started to fuse together, and we have all the music that came up through the 30s, you know, with the jazz and then with the, you know, with rock music and everything, you know, it had just a little bit of an, you know, influence, you know, particularly, you know, from, you know, a, you know, rhythm standpoint, you'll often hear that. So I think it's a very, you know.
Well, from the start, you know, in New Orleans with jazz, you know, they had the big orchestras, which were, you know, free people of color. And then, you know, the rules came in that they couldn't congregate like that. So they went and they created their own groups. And with the African rhythms and the European training, that helped create those bands, you know, and jazz was born.
So I'm going to go back to what you mm-hmm. were you're playing on Saturday.
Sunday.
Sunday. So let's go through these.
Well, the first piece is a piece by a Flemish composer, Floor Peters. It starts with the pedals, and most people love the pedals. You know, organs play with their feet, so it starts off with that.
People don't know that, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people see the organ, they don't realize, because you're on the keyboard,
oh, yeah.
But it's the
hands
feet that
feet.
Are,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, people, yeah, they don't realize all of that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we, you know. As somebody said, if you know, you can drive a stick shift, you can play an organ.
Oh, see, now that hadn't translated for me yet.
I can drive a stick shift. I'm not sure I can play the organ well.
So that's the first piece. Then it's the Calvert Johnson arrangement of A City Called Heaven, which is a spiritual.
And tell us about that piece.
It's a quiet piece. It's spiritual. It's very ethereal. It's on the softer stops. You know, in the middle it sort of builds and then it dies away. In Lotus Blossom we have some solo sounds going on, like a clarinet, a flute.
That's all in the
strings.
Organ, obviously, right?
Yeah, all in the organ.
Right.
And then at the end is a, you know, a rip-roaring piece by a Czech composer called Wiedemann, and it's just a tour de force. It's just, you know, everything is all out.
So what brought you to the organ? So tell me how, because this is, you can't carry it around with you. So.
Right. I don't know. I think it chose me. I'm originally from Barbados.
Uh-huh. And I thought I heard that, yes.
You heard that. Something in there. And I always liked church. I would go to church. I hated Sunday school. I would sneak out and go into church, and I just always loved the organ. And I wanted to do it, but my teacher wouldn't let me do it until I had a good piano background. And
which you did.
I did, and you know, I went off to study in England, came over here, and I've been in Baltimore since.
Oh, it's a long time now, right?
Almost 20 years.
Yes, I thought so. And do you have an organ in your home?
Actually, I do.
I thought as
somebody,
much.
Somebody gave it to me, and it's a three manual Allen.
Somebody just gave it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
I had to cut up part of the wall to get in, but it was going in.
well worth it.
It is.
And how about you? I mean, how did you come to the organ? How did the organ come to you?
Well, the organ kind of came to me, you know, because being a church musician, you know, it kind of automatically.
Did you grow up in Baltimore?
Yes, I did.
So what church did you grow up in?
I grew up in Metropolitan United Methodist Church. It's okay. On the same square as St. James Episcopal.
Yeah, sure. I know exactly where it is.
Yeah, it's on that same square. Yeah, I grew up there, and that was really where I had my first official, you know, position. And really, I hadn't had a whole lot of training. But Dr. Springer, he started teaching me in 2008. So, you know,
here at Morgan or independently?
Independently. Uh-huh. It was at the Nathan Carter School of Music originally. But, yeah, he started teaching me. And then in 2009, all of a sudden, you know, the pastor told me, oh, yeah, well, you want to help us, you know, just play through some hymns? I didn't know what I was doing, you know. and even now, I still don't completely know what I'm doing. That's why, you know, people always ask me, are you playing on the cross on Sunday? I say, you know, actually, I'm leaving it to these guys that you know, have a, you know. But yeah, so it kind of came to me. And I really do love the organ. I mean, even if it is like a second instrument to me, because I, you know, I'm a, you know, pianist by training, right. So, I went to a Catholic church first, and I came to St. Michael's, and I knew that they wanted to hear that organ every week, and that's how I've been here, you know, ever since.
This conversation got me thinking that the stuff you're talking about is going to be at the concert on Sunday.
Yeah.
Is any of that recorded anywhere?
The pieces?
On organ?
Yeah, some of them are. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. You know, as a matter of fact, just go on YouTube, you'll find, you know.
Yeah. Right, tons of, yeah. It's recorded. There's a lot of organ music out there.
No, I know there's, but specifically I keep thinking about the two pieces you're...
There are a few recordings. The Duke Ellington, I know one or two, recordings. It was out of print for a long time. I think it just came back into print. And the other pieces should be available.
I mean, it sounds like it would be just a tremendous concert.
It's going to be fun. And it's a great room. That's the thing. The organ is the instrument and the room.
That's right. Good. Where is the church exactly? St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal.
Yeah, it's the official address is 2013 St. Paul Street. It's at the corner of St. Paul's and 20th Street.
St. Paul and 20th. Okay. St. Paul and 20th.
It's right across the street from St. Mark's Lutheran Church.
Oh, yes, right. Okay,
It's a huge lot when you go down there. It's right across the street.
North of North Avenue.
Yeah, basically.
Yes. Right.
And then he's like that. He's just going to be one of four. I mean, there's going to be so much great repertoire played by these guys.
Before we have to break, tell us who's going to be there.
Let me see. So, you know, in addition to Dr. Springer, we also have Theodore Davis. He's the organist over at St. Bartholomew's, and he's also... He's studying his doctorate at Peabody. And then we have two people from the Maryland State Boy Choir that are also organists. Stephen Holmes, who is the artistic director of the Boy Choir, and Frank Simino, who is the founder of the Maryland State Boy Choir. And so that it's going to be the four of them, you know, that are going to be doing, you know, their repertoire. And it's really going to be a diverse lineup.
That sounds really exciting, and I wish I could be there Sunday. I do encourage people to go, but just to hear Dr. Springer play would be a joy for me just to get down there and hear you do these three pieces. Not everyone I know, but I mean...
I know.
Right. Hey, whichever featured artist you want, take your pick.
Because, to have somebody of your caliber here at Morgan State University teaching and playing is a real coup for this university, I think. And what you bring to this. Huh?
Make sure you tell them that. The president, especially.
Right. If I can just add, you know, one more quick thing. So basically, you know, we're doing this for, you know, this is a fundraiser, you know, because we're doing this to try and restore this organ, because that's what usually happens with organs over years.
All right. Sure.
You know, they start to, you know, kind of go out of repair a little bit. So, you know, we're hoping to restore this organ and just kind of bring it back into the musical culture of, you know, of this city, because, you know, again, the organ has been a part of it for decades.
Forever.
And
Brian Alston is organist and choir director at St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church. Dr. Samuel Springer, one of our own here at Morgan State University, one of the great organists of our time, an organ and piano instructor here at the university and Peabody Institute. And the Sounds of Aeolian Concert will take place this Sunday, April 26th at 4 p.m. at St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church in Baltimore. More information at smaa www.music-baltimore.com and come down and enjoy yourself and hear some amazing, amazing music to make your Sunday. And we are going to break here with Whitney Houston, Where Do Broken Hearts Go, which hit number one on this day in 1988. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
That I need you desperately, so here